We're going to start right here, and I have to tell you, this morning at 8 o'clock this morning, these were not here. Gary and Rich and I got here early, and I'm going to blame you guys. I'm going to drag y'all down with me. All right, we got here early, and we actually got to talking about today's sermon topic. And, well, somebody made a comment, and then somebody else made a comment, and then my wheels got to turning, and lo and behold, we now have an object lesson that I want to share with you. So I've got two containers here. And this is actually a leftover from our elders' meeting, okay? So they say you are what you eat. Well, this is what we ate at our elders' meeting. All right, so this is a cup of peanuts. All right, and how many nuts are in this cup? I have absolutely, positively no idea. As a matter of fact, most of them have been halved, and, well, now there's one less. And as I look at this little cup, I cannot tell you how many nuts are in this cup, but if I was really curious to know, could I find out? How? I could dump them out, and I could count them. So, now I have a jar of peanut butter. How many nuts are in the jar of peanut butter? No, I'm not going to open it up and stick my finger in it, although I am very tempted, but preaching after you lick peanut butter is a bad idea. All right, I learned that one. All right, so how many nuts are in here? Yeah, a whole bunch. As a matter of fact, the number one ingredient is peanuts. Good thing. Wouldn't you hate to get a jar of peanut butter where the number one ingredient was not peanuts? All right. But I can't tell you how many are in here because they've been shelled and halved, just like these are. Then they got crushed and smushed and some other things were added to it. And I am going to somewhat guess, I bet there may be more peanuts in here than there is in here. I don't know. And I can't count them. Isn't that interesting? I have a jar, a canister of peanuts and a canister of what is essentially peanuts. This one I can count. And this one I can't. So this morning, I am welcoming you to Grow Church Grow, the math class. Oh, no, not math class. Yeah, I love math. Math is cool because it's kind of obsolete. And when I talk about this idea of grow, church, grow, this is what we think about, right? We want more nuts in our little jar, right? Okay, because everybody in here is nuts, all right? You got that. We couldn't come up with a better analogy. Everybody here is just a little bit nutty because, I mean, you got up this morning and came here and it was a nice day. We could have done other things, right? So we want more in our jar. And so we come up with an equation on how we go about doing church growth. 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 + we can add as many ones as you want. And eventually, I end up with a number on the other side of that equation, right? And what this means is it makes the church all about individual growth, okay? The church grows by simply adding numbers. And specifically, the number that we track the most are things that get attended. We track our morning worship service. We count how many people. We track Sunday school. If we have an event at the church, we count how many people come to eat the fellowship supper. We count how many people come to this, how many people come to our group. We count just because we want to know. Is it going in the right direction? And here's the thing, I don't know how big N is supposed to be. That would depend on who I talk to, because some people want a really big N, and some people want a really small N, and some people want an N that's kind of in the middle. So I don't know how big N is supposed to get, but everybody understands that if the church is growing under this model, under the individual peanut model, then for the church to be growing, it has to get bigger, right? The equal sign on the right has to get bigger by adding to the equal sign on the left. That's called math, right? Addition. We understand this. And it doesn't really work. Matter of fact, it kind of gets us crazy because then we get really obsessed to the idea of the math and we forget that church isn't supposed to be about that kind of math. And even in the back of my mind, I know it doesn't work that way. That growth isn't just about the number of people sitting. I still keep doing it, and it's maddening. It drives you crazy just trying to add numbers. And the question you have to set back at some point in your life and ask, so why do we do this? I mean, why just count people? And I got some answers for you. I mean, you like answers to questions, right? The first reason is because it's easy. By the way, you got a while before you get to your first blank, so just hold tight. It's easy. It's really simple to count people. I mean, I can do it from up here. It doesn't take anybody hardly. You can get somebody that's in kindergarten just about to count people, unless you have a big church. Then you got to go to second or third grade, all right? But anybody can count because it's relatively easy. It's because it's about investment. By golly, I put a lot of time and energy into putting this worship service together, putting that activity together, or running that group. I put a lot of time and energy in it, and I want to know, what are we getting out of it, right? I want some return on my investment. So we treat it kind of like we treat our other investments in life, and so we look at it and say, well, is the number going up? It's all about the investment. And, well, because it's safe. If all I have to do is count the people in the building or the people that attend the events or that, then there's no real danger in that, because at least I know if you're here, you have some interest. You're not going to get mad at me if I just say one, two. You're not going to get upset. It's kind of safe. And, oh, there's a twist. It makes me less responsible if all I'm doing is counting numbers. I mean, after all, I can do special promotions to get people to the building. Donut Sunday! Woo-hoo! It's next week, by the way. Kid attendance will be up next week. Donut Sunday! Fellowship suppers. Other things that we do to try to encourage you to come. Hey, when that doesn't work, I can turn up the heat, and trust me, I'm good at playing the guilt card. I can make you feel guilty for not being here to encourage you to be here. I can send you a little text with a cute emoji saying, missed you. I could even come to your house on Sunday morning, and I could bang on your door and stand outside and say, hey, yo, it's time to come to church. And before you laugh at that, we actually did that at the church that I grew up at. We used to have Bring Them Back Alive Sunday, where they would send us out knocking on people that were missing during Sunday school to bring them back to church. And they did say alive, okay? We used to do things like that when I was growing up. And I could do that. And you know what? Give me enough time and I'll figure out a way to make the numbers go up. But here's the thing. When I do it that way, there is an absolute of all the things that I do. I can't make you come. Right? Regardless of how hard I want to try, I absolutely know it is illegal for me to go into your house and tie you up and throw you in the back of my truck and bring you to church and set you in a pew and say, now, you're in church. Woo, we're good. They call that kidnapping. Even if you're not a kid, they still call it kidnapping. But here's the thing. When I'm counting numbers, then if you come, then I get to pat myself on the back because I'm the one that encouraged you to come. But if you don't come, then I get to let myself off the hook because I can say, well, you know, I did all I could. It ain't my fault they didn't come. I tried real hard. And churches have been doing this for I don't know how long, and it's crazy. And then you stop for a moment, and you start thinking about it, and you realize that numbers are not the thing that causes a church to grow. And that brings us to our next law. It's called the law of love. Real church growth is validated by unity, not numbers. So now I got to do something that everybody hates. You ever had your kids come home or they got new math? How can you make new math, right? 1 + 1 is still going to equal 2, right? How do you make new math? Math has been around like forever. Well, sort of, because we start with this equation. Can I tell you we got the wrong formula? No, when you start talking about the idea of unity, now we get this. 1 + 1 + 1 + 1, and I don't care how many ones you put on the left side, the right side has still got to equal 1. And now if you're a math teacher, you're like, okay, Barry, that ain't the way math works. That makes zero sense whatsoever. And you have to understand the idea is still more people, because we're still trying to put more people on the left side. We're still trying to have more impact. However, we're not trying to add to the total. We're trying to add to the whole. Let that wander for just a second. Because as I begin talking about this idea of unity, unity's goal is not for us to be godlier, but instead to make us more God-like. like? So that we can demonstrate and share the love of God to others. And I'm thinking about that, and I need some help. Mr. Keating, do you have a lesson for us today?
No grades at stake, gentlemen. Just take a stroll. There it is. Stride, their own pace. Mr. Pitts, taking his time. He knew he'll get there one day. Mr. Cameron, you could see him thinking, is this right? It might be right. I know this. Maybe not. I don't know. Now, I didn't bring them up here to ridicule them. I brought them up here to illustrate the point of conformity, the difficulty in maintaining your own beliefs in the face of others. Now, those of you, I see the look in your eyes like, I would have walked differently. Well, ask yourselves why you were clapping. Now, we all have a great need for acceptance. But you must trust that your beliefs are unique, your own, even though others may think them odd or unpopular, even though the herd may go, that's bad. Robert Frost said, two roads diverged in the wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. Now, I want you to find your own walk right now, your own way of striding, pacing, any direction, anything you want, whether it's proud, whether it's silly, anything. Gentlemen, the courtyard is yours. You don't have to perform. Just make it for yourself. Mr. Dalton, you'll be joining us.
Exercising the right not to walk.
Thank you, Mr. Dalton. Just illustrated the point. Swim against the stream.
I know what you're sort of thinking. All right, Barry, that ain't about unity. That's about disunity. Just hold on a second. That sort of depends on how you define the word unity. And surprise, surprise, I'm not going to give you a dictionary definition. As a matter of fact, I'm going to make sure you understand what unity is not. By the way, we're getting to your fill in the blanks, but you might be missing a few. Okay? So, here we go. What is unity not? Well, it's perfect for Mr. Keating's little lesson here, because unity is not conformity. That's not how it works. Being united does not mean that we are, quote, uniform. Here's the real deal. You can be a little bit country, and I can be a little bit rock and roll, and you know what? That's okay. You can be ties and suits. I can be t-shirts and blue jeans, and that's okay. As a matter of fact, beyond conformity, unity doesn't actually mean that we have to agree on everything. You can think blue. Notice I dressed in all blue today. You can think blue is a terrible color. And yes, I did make sure it was blue before I came here, because sometimes blue don't look blue to me. But you can think blue is a terrible color, but it can be my favorite color. You can think any ice cream but vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry is diabolical, and I can absolutely love butter pecan. You can like good old King James, and I can like NIV. Even doctrinally, and I know this is going to bother some people, I hold in very high respect many people that have very different doctrinal stances other than the ones that I have, as long as it's not connected to the person of Jesus. I'm going to bother you even more. See, since it is getting close to election, you do understand something. You can be a Democrat, a Republican, an Independent, or even one of those people that are not very politically charged, and guess what? We can still be united. Boy, wouldn't that be a trick these days? Yeah, it works that way. Because being in unity doesn't mean that I have to agree. Okay? Being in unity is not about proximity. Think about that for a second. It's not about being in proximity or close to somebody. Really? Well, yeah. Just because I'm physically close doesn't mean that I'm actually united. After all, I go to a lot of movies. And I sat in a lot of movies with a lot of strangers that I've never met before in my life. And some of them are sitting right next to me. And trust me, we're not very united sometimes, because sometimes you get next to one of those people that want to text during the phone during the movie. And I want to take their phone and go, put that thing away, because you're interrupting my movie. Understand, just because I'm close to you in proximity doesn't mean that I have unity. In fact, just because I'm going in the same general direction of you, maybe even moving at the same pace, doesn't mean that we're together. Don't believe me? Next time you're sitting in traffic, do you go, woohoo, unity? No. We're going, oh, get out of my way. Right? So just because we're all going in the same direction, it's not the way it works. It's not unity. In fact, even if you have the same destination, that does not create unity. How do I know? Because I have flown on a plane before. And as many times as I've flown on a plane, I've gotten on the plane, and thankfully for me, everybody that got on the plane, when the plane got off, everybody got back off the plane, and we were in the same destination. Were we unified? Maybe we were all praying, don't let the plane crash while we're up in the air, but we aren't unified just because I'm going in the same direction. And that's because unity is much more than just space, place, or even pace. See, it has little to do with commonality. That's one of the blanks I know you're missing. Just because you have like interests does not make us united. Okay? It doesn't. We can root for the same football team, but I may not be able to stand you if you put us in the same room. All right? Just because we have commonality doesn't mean that I am united with anybody. See, when we talk about unity, it's really about this word called oneness. Now, do you get it? You get your object lesson? Are these nuts unified? Well, they're all in the same bucket, but they're still individuals. Are these nuts unified? Oh, they are. Because they've been shelled and smushed and processed and heated up and blended and maybe even had a few other ingredients added to them, and so now you can't tell where one nut ends and the other nut starts. This is your picture. Notice, we're still all nuts. All right, I didn't change my little mode there. But I need you to understand this idea of oneness. So for oneness, I am going to give you a definition from a dictionary about what oneness is. Oneness is the fact or state of being unified, or, here's our word, whole, though comprised of two or more parts. So if you don't like the church application, if you're married, then I'm giving you good marriage counseling today too, all right? Because that's the picture that Jesus kind of used. We're supposed to be the bride of Christ, and it's a unifying experience. And so you can apply this in many different ways. It doesn't have to be just about unity in the church. But the thing that I do need you to see is oneness acknowledges our differences. The boys in the courtyard, walk your own walk, wiggle, stride, big steps, little steps. You understand, we're all going to have a different stride or a different way that we're doing this walk. Nobody, there are no two people in this room that does this exactly the same. They don't exist. If I follow you around long enough, we will find a difference between us. I'm talking doctrinally as far as our Christian walk. There's differences. However, while oneness acknowledges our differences, it does something else. It's at the same time, it points out our, there's our word, dependency. That's a word that we don't like in our society, do we? I don't want to be dependent. And for the church, there's the trap. Because we are trying to design something that people want to come to. Which means what we are trying to do is we're trying to bring them to church, while we're allowing them to keep their individuality. Think about what that means. That means it's the person planning things, whether it's the minister, the elders, or just a ministry leader, that means I have to plan something for everybody. Whew. That means I got to give a worship service that meets both the people that like the hymns and the people that like the contemporary. That means when I do an event, I got to have people that, I've got everything. And so I'm trying to create an experience for you that allows you to keep your individuality when oneness requires a word that we like even less than dependency. Oneness requires something called submission. Those peanuts and that peanut butter right now, they submitted. Okay, not willingly. They didn't go, woohoo, make me into peanut butter, all right? I don't think peanuts could talk. I don't think they'd been very happy about that process. But you know what? They submitted. They've had their individuality taken away from them. But then Jesus looks at us and said, but I'm not going to take it from you. You have to give it to me. That's unity, folks. It's just like marriage, which is not a partnership. If you're truly married, it was a complete merger. And yourself doesn't really exist anymore. Is that not what Adam said? It's now bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. The two shall become 1.5. This is math class, folks. The two become one. One plus one equals one. See? This is God's equation, not my equation. I didn't make this up. So here's the thing. Jesus, at one point in his ministry, we're right near the end of Jesus' ministry, he's like, I am going to pray for the church, not the current church, because Jesus is standing 2,000 years ago, and he's about to pray this prayer, so he is praying for future church. Ah, that's where the title came from. He is praying for future church. And here is the big part of his prayer. My prayer is not for them alone, so not just for the people standing there in the room with me. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one. For just as you are in me and I am in you, may they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. So today, if you're here sitting in this building or you're online listening, and you call yourself a Christian, a follower of Christ, then this is what Jesus is praying for the church. I find it interesting what he didn't pray for. He didn't pray for us. I'm ahead of myself. Now let's try this. As great as Jesus' sacrifice was, understand it was incomplete without the apostles' message. He paid it all, but if the apostles didn't do their job, wouldn't the world look a whole lot different today? Now I get to go where I was going. What he did not ask for. See, this is his prayer, that all of them may be one. Father, as you are in me and I am in you. He didn't pray to make us healthy. Oh, come on, Jesus. You got the power of healing. Come on. Don't you know I've got issues in my physical life? I got bones that creak and parts that don't work the way they used to anymore. I get sniffles and sneezes and allergies. And why can't you just pray? Forget this unity thing. Let's just make ourselves healthy. Jesus had his one prayer, and this wasn't what he prayed for. He didn't pray to make us happy. I want to tell you something. On November 6th next week, there are going to be a whole bunch of unhappy people. Okay? And I hate to tell you this. God doesn't care if it makes you unhappy, because God didn't come to make you happy. And Jesus didn't say, hey, give them the easy road. Make it all nice and comfy for them. Pad the pews. Get them ready. Make it all good. You know what? Let's just have a happy place, right? That's not what Jesus prayed for. But man, we sure would have liked if he prayed for that, right? Nope. You know what else he didn't pray for? I just find astonishing. He did not pray for us to be together physically. Wow. Ponder that thought for a moment. He didn't say, Father, will you please give them a building so they have some place to come and worship? That's not his prayer. Of course, that would have been a silly prayer, right? Because he's praying for 2,000 years of time. Could you imagine if we had a 2,000-year-old person sitting here today? We might actually have high attendance just if we say, come see the 2,000-year-old person. He's praying for people across time. So he's not praying for the physical togetherness that we think makes up unity. We think if I can just get you in the same space, I can teach you to be unified. I cannot teach you how to be unified. How do I know? Because if you could teach unity, Jesus would have taught it and not prayed for it. Doesn't that make sense? Unity is derived by something much bigger than just us having events, activities, a worship service. Unity has a great big purpose. He does not pray for us to be godly. He asks for us to be godlike. Now, I want you to really ponder that thought for a second. What he actually prayed for was for me to be like him and his father, who, while two separate, distinct individuals, he says, he's in me, I'm in him, we are one. You see, we think Jesus is praying for a jar full of nuts, and he's praying for a jar full of peanut butter. He wants us together, and not just in the same area. He wants us blended and smushed and processed and shelled. That's what he's praying for. Now, all of a sudden, I don't like this prayer because I don't want to be shelled. I don't want to be smushed. I don't want to be crushed. I don't want to be taken that way. What are you asking, Jesus? And Jesus said, hey, this is what unity is all about. See, the goal of unity, again, is not to make you like me. Excuse me, not for us to make me like. I'll say this right in a second. The goal of unity is not to make you like me, but for us to make each other like God. Now, in the church, we spend a whole lot of time trying to make you look like me, or in y'all's cases, make me look like y'all. We go back and forth. We want everybody to kind of be the same, right? Because if I can make everybody the same, that makes unity a lot harder, you know, a lot easier. But that's not the goal. My goal is not to make you like me. My goal is to make you like God, and for you to make me like God. Back and forth is supposed to go. So that means when I do see you going somewhere else in unity, I can say, you know what? Where you're going in your life ain't a good place. Get off the tracks because the train's coming, right? See, maybe the reason we don't understand unity is because it's a lesson not about explaining it to you. I have to demonstrate it to you. Peanuts, peanut butter. Do you get it? Ununified, unified. Individuals, together. That's the picture. 1 + 1 + 1 = 3. 1 + 1 + 1 = 1 jar of peanut butter. You're going to think about peanut butter in a whole new light whenever you're going to make your crackers tonight, right? Okay, you're going to say, wonder who I'm eating this time. But you do understand that this idea is something that, while I can't exactly teach a great lesson about it, the Apostle Paul gave us a way that we may demonstrate it. Yeah, here's some verses you're familiar with. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 2 through 7. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. There is one body, one Spirit, just as you were called to one hope when you were called. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all. So let's just break this thing apart. How do I make unity? Not by scheduling activities. Activities help. Okay, this is not me saying we can never have activities, because trust me, in about a month, we're going to have the hot chocolate bar. And while I don't drink the stuff, I really do like to make it, and I'm looking forward to this, okay? So I'm not saying activities are bad. As a matter of fact, they're helpful, but activities are not unity. No, that's not where it starts. It starts with these two words. Yich, humble and gentle. And don't think for a minute Paul doesn't know what he's doing. He says this is the starting point. If you don't get this one, the others don't come with it. Now, what does that mean, to be humble and gentle? Really simple. Do not put your needs above the needs of anybody else in the body. Well, I don't do that. Yeah, we all do. We all do. And the thing that you need to remember is that this idea of humble is the, it's kind of the driver in the word submissive, is it not? Have you ever met an arrogant person that's ready to submit to anything? Most of the time they won't even admit they're wrong, let alone submit to it. So we have to understand that we have to be submissive. But then Paul throws in that good old curveball. While I'm learning to be humble, I have to add the word gentle. No bulls in the china shop, folks. You're not allowed to bring rocks to church to throw at other people's sin. Understand, we're not making peanut butter. Our job as the church is to complete, not crush. Okay? I'm not here to crush you, but I think God is here to complete us. But we have to become willing to the process. We're supposed to treat oneness kind of like it's fragile, because it is. We love that song, "It Only Takes a Spark to Get a Fire Going." That's true. But it only takes one rock to break a window, right? That's all it takes. I don't have to have 50. I just have to have one and really good aim. And I can shatter your life and shatter oneness with one simple flip of the wrist. This idea of humbleness and gentleness is the reason we like the other math. Yep. Because in the other math, I get to avoid this entirely because I get to stay the individual. I get to add myself to the right, to the left side, so I become part of the right part. Here, I must subtract me from myself, make myself dependent so that we can have the whole. And that's a whole lot harder than I just made it sound. And that's why it's the starting point. If we do not have a humble spirit when we're dealing with one another, we're never going to have unity. And I don't care if we make an activity that you're here every single day of every single week and you're encouraged to be, it's never going to happen without humbleness. But it doesn't stop there. No, and he uses our favorite word, right? Be patient. This isn't going to happen overnight, folks. People are going to move at different speeds, and this is not marching. The goal of this is not this. Come to church and sing a song. I hope he don't preach very long. That's not what we're trying to do. I'm not trying to get you moving in unison. I'm trying to get you to move in unity. And that means that sometimes somebody in the group is going to be moving a little bit slow and we have to stop and help them catch up. Oh my gosh. It means that every time somebody new comes in, the entire group may have to go back to square one to make sure they get in. Last week we started puppets. We had two new puppeteers. We had three that had been with us for years and years and years, and they knew exactly, the three that had been with us for years and years and years, knew exactly where we were going to start. How do you count to 10? Because that's important to a puppetry. And you know what? They had to sit there and go through the same exercise. I bet they've done it at least a dozen times. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They had to keep doing it until the others caught up with it. Why? Unity. Unity. Because we don't want just individual parts. We want everybody to be together. And that means that sometimes you just have to be patient and wait for the other person to catch up with you. And don't just wait on them like, "Are you there yet? Come on, I got places to go. Get moving." No, it means that not only are you waiting for them, you go back and say, "Can I help you?" And I don't mean you help them. I say, "Get moving. Can I help you? What can I do for you?" See, that's unity. Looks quite different than what we usually think, doesn't it? Because it says that as we're dealing with this, we're supposed to bear with one another in love. Now, I've heard this preached. This does not mean we're supposed to put up with one another. The definition of bear with one another in love is not to tolerate. If you find yourself tolerating people in church, other people in church are not the person with the problem. It's your problem. Because you're not bearing with them in love. You're simply putting up with them. Here's what it really means. This means that I don't just overlook the fact that sometimes you're weird. In fact, I embrace the fact that your weirdness completes me and us. On the reverse side, you don't overlook the fact that at times I am very weird. As a matter of fact, you embrace the fact that my very weirdness completes you. Wow. Okay, so you don't necessarily have to be as weird as me, but it does mean that you understand the value that we're all different and unique. We're all walking about that courtyard, and some of us are walking silly, and some of us are marching, and some of us are taking, you get it, right? The people in that courtyard, they could still be unified because guess what? They were all walking together. Even the kid that sat there and said, choosing not to walk, he wasn't excluded. And then we get to the one that just breaks our back. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. I love this. Paul says that oneness, well, this thing is going to take a lot of hard work. You know, that's why we don't do it, right? Tell you what, let's forget the unity. Let's just go back to counting the nuts in the pew. That's easy, right? 1, 2, 3, 4. I can get that number in a heartbeat. This unity thing, it's going to be hard work. It's going to be frustrating. It's going to be irritating. You're going to look at this and say, you got to have a better plan because that can't be what you came up with. And it's going to take effort, and even on the best days, your effort's going to come up short. Well, that's discouraging. No, it's not. It just means we get to go do it all again tomorrow. Not next week, all again tomorrow. It means that I am pouring my life into the people that are around me. Oh, wait a minute. That sounds like sharing the gospel, doesn't it? See how this all fits together hand in hand? And when it all breaks down, I love it that Paul said, by the way, when it all breaks down, remember, we are keeping the unity and the bond of peace. And so we always have this thing called prayer when it all starts falling apart. And I had two really crazy thoughts. Okay, we always read in the early church how the early church prayed so much, right? And we always want to go, look at them, they prayed so much. How about this? Maybe the reason they prayed so much is because they spent so much time around each other. Prayer was the only way they could keep from killing each other, right? I mean, who has arguments in the middle of prayer, right? Who has disagreements in the middle of prayer? Not many. The other thought I had is, okay, so maybe if we adopted their idea that if I'm having struggles with a person in my congregation, I'm having a problem in my body, I'm having that going on, maybe if we would spend more time saying, hey, look, I don't want to pray for you, I want to pray with you, and we get on our knees, we might have holes in our knees, but maybe a few less holes in our congregation. Wow. Because we're promoting peace. Not peace as in I get my way and you surrender. And not even peace that you get your way and I surrender. We're saying, hey, we have a difference, so let's just go to God in prayer, and we'll keep praying about this until God settles the difference. And you know what might happen? He might never settle the difference. And that's okay, because go back to the definition about unity. I don't have to agree with you on everything. I don't have to be a Washington Commander fan to come to church. But there is forgiveness for them, okay? I just want to let you know that. I can be a Dallas Cowboy fan, and I can come to church with people that root for Washington. Sometimes it's hard, but I can. You get it, right? We're all supposed to be with each other, promoting the body's health, not my health. And in case all of these little actions don't convince you that this is where Paul is heading, remember that equation I showed you at the beginning? 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 = 1. You know where I took that equation from? I stole it. It's Paul's equation. Listen to it. One body, one spirit, one hope, one Lord and one faith, one baptism, one God and Father who is over all. Do you see it? Paul starts off his little oneness exactly how Jesus started out his prayer. He started with the body, the individuals, and ended up with God. That's the sum. I'm not here to make you part of this church. I'm not here to make you part of me. I am here to make you part of God. And don't we all sort of need that? Anybody here arrived? I just want to make sure. Nobody here has arrived at God status yet? Me either. I got a long ways to go. Now, not make me God. The idea is to make me God-like. That's an interesting thought, isn't it? I mean, did you know, statistically speaking, that seven is the most common number that you can roll on a pair of dice. And that has nothing to do with anything. It's just good trivia. But you also understand 7 is also the number of completion when it comes to Jewishness. And that means exactly what Paul was after. When Paul lays these out, he starts with the body, ends like God. And that's because, guess what? If we take these actions, then we get to focus on our commonality and not our differences. If I look at these nuts in the jar, by the way, not bad of using the object lesson considering I only got it at 8 o'clock this morning. God, you really need a little runway here. But just think about it. If I go through here and I look at this, I don't think there's probably 2 in here that are alike. Different sizes, different shapes. But if I take these, I absolutely can't make this, right? I just have to take from individuals to make it one.